of the Tale of Pooh, Part 6. Bissy Baxson. Bicey? Bissy, I guess. Rabbit hurried on by the edge of the 100-acre wood, feeling more important every minute, and soon he came to the tree where Christopher Robin lived. He knocked at the door, and he called out once or twice, and then he walked back a little way and put his paw up to keep the sun out and called up to the top of the tree, and then he turned all around and shouted, "Hello!" and "I say, it's Rabbit!" But nothing happened. Then he stopped and listened, and everything stopped and listened with him, and the forest was very lone and still and peaceful in the sunshine, until suddenly, 100 miles above him, a lark began to sing. "Bother," said Rabbit, "he's gone out." He went back to the green front door just to make sure, and he was turning away, feeling that his morning had gone all spoilt, when he saw a piece of paper on the ground, and there was a pin in it, as if it had fallen off the door. "Ha," said Rabbit, feeling quite happy again, "another notice." This is what it said: "Gone out, Baxson, Bissy, Baxson, CR. Rabbit didn't know what a Baxson was, in spite of the fact that he is one, so he went to ask Owl. Owl didn't know either. But we think we know, and we think a lot of other people do, too. Chuang-Tzu described one quite accurately. There was a man who disliked seeing his footprints and his shadow. He decided to escape from them, and he began to run. But as he ran along, more footprints appeared, while his shadow easily kept up with him. Thinking he was going too slowly, he ran faster and faster without stopping until he finally collapsed from exhaustion and died. If he had stood still, there would have been no footprints. If he had rested in the shade, his shadow would have disappeared. You see them almost everywhere you go, it seems. On practically any sunny sort of day, you can see the Baxsons stampeding through the park, making all kinds of loud breathing noises. Perhaps you are enjoying a picnic on the grass when you suddenly look up to find that one or two of them just ran over your lunch. Generally, though, you are safe around trees and grass, as Baxsons tend to avoid them. They prefer instead to struggle along on asphalt and concrete, in imitation of the short-lived transportation machines for which those hard surfaces were designed. Inhaling poisonous exhaust fumes from the vehicles that swerve to avoid hitting them, the Baxsons blabber away to each other about how much better they feel now that they have gotten outdoors. Natural living, they call it. The Bissy Baxson is almost desperately active. If you ask him what his life interests are, he will give you a list of physical activities, such as skydiving, tennis, jogging, racquetball, skiing, swimming, and water skiing. "Is that all?" "Well, I think so," says Baxson. "Have you ever tried chasing cars?"
No, I never have.
"How about wrestling alligators?"
"No, I always wanted to, though."
"Roller skating down a flight of stairs?"
"No, I never thought of it."
"But you said you were active." At this point, the Baxson replies thoughtfully, "Say, do you think there's something wrong with me? Maybe I'm losing my energy." "After a while, maybe." The athletic sort of Baxson, one of the many common varieties, is concerned with physical fitness, he says. but for some reason, he sees it as something that has to be pounded in from the outside, rather than built up from the inside. Therefore, he confuses exercise with work. He works when he works, works when he exercises, and more often than not, works when he plays. Work, work, work. All work and no play makes Baxon a dull boy. Kept up for long enough, it makes him dead, too. Well, here's Rabbit. Hello, Rabbit. What's new? I just got back from Owls, said Rabbit, slightly out of breath. Oh? You were certainly gone a long time. Yes, well, Owl insisted on telling me a story about his great-uncle Filbert. Oh, that's why. But anyway, Owl said that he hasn't seen the uncarved block either, but that Rue is probably playing with it. So I stopped off at Kanga's house, but no one was there. They're out in the forest practicing jumps with Tigger, I said. Oh, well, I'd better be going then. That's all right, Rabbit, because... Where'd he go? That's how it is, you know. No rest for the Baxon. Let's put it this way. If you want to be healthy, relaxed, and contented, just watch what a busy Baxon does, and then do the opposite. There's one now, pacing back and forth, jingling the loose coins in his pocket, nervously glancing at his watch. He makes you feel tired just looking at him. The chronic Baxon always seems to have to be going somewhere, at least on a superficial, physical level. He doesn't go out for a walk, though. He doesn't have time. Not conversing, said Eeyore. Not first one and then the other. You said hello and flashed past. I saw your tail in the distance as I was meditating my reply. I had thought of saying, what? But, of course, it was then too late. Well, I was in a hurry. No give and take, Eeyore went on. No exchange of thought. Hello. What? I mean, it gets you nowhere, particularly if the other person's tail is only just in sight for the second half of the conversation. The busy Baxon is always on the run, it seems. Always gone out, back soon, busy, back soon. Or, more accurately, back out, gone soon, busy, gone soon. The busy Baxon is always going somewhere, somewhere he hasn't been, anywhere but where he is. That's just it, said Rabbit. Where? Perhaps he's looking for something. What? Asked Rabbit. That's just what I was going to say, said Pooh. And then he added, perhaps he's looking for a reward, perhaps. Our busy Baxon religions, sciences, and business ethics have tried their hardest to convince us that there is a great reward waiting for us somewhere, and that what we have to do is spend our lives working like lunatics to catch up with it, whether it's up in the sky, behind the next molecule, or in the executive suite. It's somehow always farther along than we are, just down the road, on the other side of the world, past the moon, beyond the stars. Ouch, said Pooh, landing on the floor. That's what happens when you go to sleep on the edge of the writing table, I said. You fall off. Just as well, said Pooh. Why is that? I asked. I was having an awful dream, he said. Oh? Yes, I'd found a jar of honey, he said, rubbing his eyes. What's awful about that? I asked. It kept moving, said Pooh. They're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to sit still.
Yes, I know. But whenever I reached for it, this jar of honey would sort of go someplace else. A nightmare, I said. Lots of people have dreams like that, I added reassuringly. Oh, said Pooh, about unreachable jars of honey? About the same sort of thing, I said. That's not unusual. The odd thing, though, is that some people live like that. Why? Asked Pooh. I don't know, I said. I suppose because it gives them something to do. It doesn't sound like much fun to me, said Pooh. No, it doesn't. A way of life that keeps saying, around the next corner, above the next step, works against the natural order of things, and makes it so difficult to be happy and good that only a few get to where they would naturally have been in the first place, happy and good, and the rest give up and fall by the side of the road, cursing the world, which is not to blame, but which is there to help show the way. Those who think that the rewarding things in life are somewhere beyond the rainbow burn their toast a lot, said Pooh. I beg your pardon? They burn their toast a lot, said Pooh. Well, yes, and not only that. Here comes Rabbit, said Pooh. Oh, there you are, said Rabbit. Here we are, said Pooh. Yes, here we are, I said. And there you are, said Pooh. Yes, here I am, said Rabbit impatiently. To come to the point, Roo showed me his set of blocks. They're all carved and painted with letters on them. Oh, I said. Just the sort of thing you'd expect to see, actually, said Rabbit, stroking his whiskers thoughtfully. So by process of elimination, he said, that means Eeyore has it. But Rabbit, I said, you see... Yes, said Rabbit, I see Eeyore and find out what he knows about it. That's clearly the next step. There he goes, said Pooh. Looking back a few years, we see that the first busy Baxons in this part of the world, the Puritans, practically worked themselves to death in the fields without getting much of anything in return for their tremendous efforts. They were actually starving until the wiser inhabitants of the land showed them a few things about working in harmony with the earth's rhythms. Now you plant, now you relax. Now you work the soil, now you leave it alone. The Puritans never really understood the second half, never really believed in it. And so, after two or three centuries of pushing, pushing, and pushing, the once fertile earth, and a few years of depleting its energy still further with synthetic stimulants, we have apples that taste like cardboard, oranges that taste like tennis balls, and pears that taste like sweetened styrofoam, all products of soil that is not allowed to relax. We're not supposed to complain, but there it is. Say, Pooh, why aren't you busy? I said. Because it's a nice day, said Pooh. Yes, but why ruin it? He said. But you could be doing something important, I said. I am, said Pooh. Oh, doing what? Listening, he said. Listening to what? To the birds and that squirrel over there. What are they saying? I asked. That it's a nice day, said Pooh. But you know that already, I said. Yes, but it's always good to hear that somebody else thinks so, too, he replied. Well, you could be spending your time getting educated by listening to the radio instead, I said. That thing? Certainly. How else will you know what's going on in the world? I said. By going outside, said Pooh. Well... Click. Now just listen to this, Pooh. 30,000 people were killed today when 5 jumbo airliners collided over downtown Los Angeles, the radio announced.
What does that tell you about the world? Asked Pooh.
You're right. Click.
What are the birds saying now? I asked.
That it's a nice day, said Pooh.
It certainly is, even if the Baxons are too busy to enjoy it. But to conclude our explanation of why so busy, the hard-headed followers of the previously mentioned party-crashing busybody religion failed to appreciate the beauty of the endless forest and clear waters that appeared before them on this fresh green continent of the New World. Instead, they saw the paradise that was here and the people who lived in harmony with it as alien and threatening. Something to attack and conquer, because it all stood in the way of the great reward. They didn't like singing very much either. In fact,
what? Said Pooh. No singing.
Pooh, I'm trying to finish this. That's right, though. No singing. They didn't like it.
Well, if they didn't like singing, then what was their attitude towards bears?
I don't think they liked bears either.
They didn't like bears?
No, not very much anyway.
No singing, no bears. Just what did they like?
I don't think they liked anything, Pooh.
No wonder things are a little confused around here, he said.
Anyway, from the miserable Puritan came the restless pioneer, and from him the lonely cowboy, always riding off into the sunset, looking for something just down the trail. From this rootless, dissatisfied ancestry has come the busy Baxon, who, like his forefathers, never really felt at home, at peace, with this friendly land. Rigid, combative fanatic that he is, the tight-fisted Baxon is just too hard on himself, too hard on others, and too hard on the world that heroically attempts to carry on in spite of what he is doing to it. It's not surprising, therefore, that the Baxon thinks of progress in terms of fighting and overcoming. One of his little idiosyncrasies, you might say. Of course, real progress involves growing and developing, which involves changing inside. But that's something the inflexible Baxon is unwilling to do. The urge to grow and develop, present in all forms of life, becomes perverted in the busy Baxon's mind into a constant struggle to change everything, the bulldozer Baxon, and everyone, the bigoted Baxon, else but himself, and interfere with things he has no business interfering with, including practically every form of life on Earth. At least to a limited extent, his behavior has been held in check by wiser people around him. But, like parents of hyperactive children, the wise find that they can't be everywhere at once. Babysitting the Baxons wears you out.
Here's Rabbit again, said Pooh, and Eeyore.
Oh, Rabbit, I said.
And Eeyore, said Eeyore.
I asked Eeyore, said Rabbit.
That's me, said Eeyore.
Eeyore.
Yes, I remember, I said. I saw you just last year out in the swamp somewhere.
Swamp, said Eeyore indignantly. It's not a swamp, it's a bog.
Swamp, bog.
What's a bog? Asked Pooh.
If your ankles get wet, that's a bog, said Eeyore.
I see, said Pooh.
Whereas, continued Eeyore, if you sink in up to your neck, that's a swamp.
Swamp indeed, he added bitterly.
Ha!
Anyway, I asked Eeyore, said Rabbit, and he said he didn't have the slightest idea what I was talking about.
It appears that I'm not alone in that, put in Eeyore. You don't have the slightest idea either, obviously. "Just what is the uncarved block?" asked Rabbit.
"It's me," said Pooh.
"You?" said Eeyore. "I came all the way over here."
"From the swamp," I added helpfully.
"From the bog to see Pooh?"
"Why not?" asked Pooh.
"Anything for Rabbit to keep busy over," said Eeyore sarcastically. "Anything at all, apparently."
Now, one thing that seems rather odd to us is that the busy Baxen society, which practically worships youthful energy, appearance, and attitudes, has developed no effective methods of retaining them, a lack testified to by an ever-increasing reliance on the unnatural, false-front approach of cosmetics and plastic surgery. Instead, it has developed countless ways of breaking youthfulness down and destroying it. Those damaging activities that are not part of the search for the great reward seem to accumulate under the general heading of saving time. For an example of the latter, let's take a classic moment to the busy Baxen, the hamburger stand. In China, there is the tea house. In France, there is the sidewalk cafe. Practically every civilized country in the world has some sort of equivalent, a place where people can go to eat, relax, and talk things over without worrying about what time it is, and without having to leave as soon as the food is eaten. In China, for example, the tea house is a real social institution. Throughout the day, families, neighbors, and friends drop in for tea and light food. They stay as long as they like. Discussions may last for hours. It would be a bit strange to call the tea house the non-exclusive neighborhood social club. Such terms are too Western. But that can roughly describe part of the function, at least from our rather compartmentalized point of view. You're important. Relax and enjoy yourself. That's the message of the tea house. What's the message of the hamburger stand? Quite obviously, it's you don't count. Hurry up. Not only that, but as everyone knows by now, the horrible hamburger stand is an insult to the customer's health as well. Unfortunately, this is not the only example supported by the saving time mentality. We could also list the supermarket, the microwave oven, the nuclear power plant, the poisonous chemicals. Practically speaking, if time-saving devices really save time, there would be more time available to us now than ever before in history. But, strangely enough, we seem to have less time than even a few years ago. It's really great fun to go someplace where there are no time-saving devices, because when you do, you find that you have lots of time. Elsewhere, you're too busy working to pay for machines to save you time so that you won't have to work so hard. The main problem with this great obsession for saving time is very simple. You can't save time. You can only spend it. But you can spend it wisely or foolishly. The busy Baxen has practically no time at all because he's too busy wasting it by trying to save it. And by trying to save every bit of it, he ends up wasting the whole thing. Henry David Thoreau put it this way in Walden: "Why should we live with such hurry and waste of life? We are determined to be starved before we are hungry. Men say that a stitch in time saves nine, and so they take 1,000 stitches today to save 9 tomorrow." For colorful contrast with the youth-destroying, busy Baxen society, let's get back to Taoism for a moment. One of the most intriguing things about Taoism is that it is not
is that it not only contains respect for the old and wise, but also for the figure known as the youthful immortal. The Taoist tradition is filled with fascinating stories, fiction, and accounts, fact, embellished or otherwise, of those who, while still young, discovered the secrets of life. However the discoveries were made, the result in each case was the same: a long life of youthful appearance, outlook, and energy. For that matter, Taoist immortals of all age levels have traditionally been known for their young attitudes, appearances, and energies. These were hardly accidental, but resulted from Taoist practices. For centuries in China, the general life expectancy was not much more than 40 years, and hardworking farmers and dissipated aristocrats often died younger than that. Yet countless Taoists lived into their 80s and 90s, and many lived considerably longer. The following is one of our favorite examples. In 1933, newspapers around the world announced the death of a man named Li Chengyun. As officially and irrefutably recorded by the Chinese government, and as verified by a thorough independent investigation, Li had been born in 1677. When over the age of 200, he had given a series of 28 three-hour-long talks on longevity at a Chinese university. Those who saw him at that time claimed that he looked like a man in his 50s, standing straight and tall, with strong teeth and a full head of hair. When he died, he was 256 years old. When Li was a child, he left home to follow some wandering herbalists. In the mountains of China, he learned from them some of the secrets of the earth's medicine. In addition to using various rejuvenative herbs daily, he practiced Taoist exercises, believing that exercise, which strains and tires the mind and body, shortens life. His favorite way of traveling was what he called walking lightly. Young men who went for walks with him when he was in his later years could not match his pace, which he maintained for miles. He advised those who wanted strong health to sit like a turtle, walk like a pigeon, and sleep like a dog. When asked for his major secret, though, he would reply, "Inner quiet." Speaking of that sort of thing, let's return to the house at Pooh Corner. Christopher Robin has just asked Pooh a question. "What do you like doing best in the world, Pooh?" "Well," said Pooh, "what I like best..." And then he had to stop and think. Because although eating honey was a very good thing to do, there was a moment just before you began to eat it, which was better than when you were, but he didn't know what it was called. The honey doesn't taste so good once it is being eaten. The goal doesn't mean so much once it is reached. The reward is not so rewarding once it has been given. If we add up all the rewards in our lives, we wouldn't have very much. But if we add up the spaces between the rewards, we'll come up with quite a bit. And if we add up the rewards and the spaces, then we'll have everything, every minute of the time that we spent. What if we could enjoy it? The Christmas presents once opened are not so much fun as they were while we were in the process of examining, lifting, shaking, thinking about, and opening them. 365 days later, we try again and find that the same thing has happened. Each time the goal is reached, it becomes not so much fun, and we're off to reach the next one, then the next one, then the next. That doesn't mean that the goals we have don't count. They do, mostly because they cause us to go through the process. And it's the process that makes us wise, happy, or whatever. If we do things in the wrong sort of way, it makes us miserable, angry, confused, and things like that. The goal has to be right for us, and it has to be beneficial in order to ensure a beneficial process. But aside from that, it's really the process that's important. Enjoyment of the process is the secret that erases the myths of the great reward and saving time. Perhaps this can help to explain the everyday significance of the word Tao, the way. What could we call that moment before we begin to eat the honey? Some would call it anticipation, but we think it's more than that. We would call it awareness. It's when we become happy and realize it, if for only an instant. By enjoying the process, we can stretch that awareness out so that it's no longer only a moment, but covers the whole thing. Then we can have a lot of fun, just like Pooh. And then he thought that being with Christopher Robin was a very good thing to do, and having Piglet near was a very friendly thing to have. And so, when he had thought it all out, he said, "What I like best in the whole world is me and Piglet going to see you, and you saying, 'What about a little something?' And me saying, 'Well, I shouldn't mind a little something, should you, Piglet?' And it being a hummy sort of day outside, and the birds singing." When we take the time to enjoy our surroundings and appreciate being alive, we find that we have no time to be busy Baxons anymore. But that's all right, because being busy Baxons is a tremendous waste of time. As the poet Lu Yu wrote, "The clouds above us join and separate. The breeze in the courtyard leaves and returns. Life is like that, so why not relax? Who can stop us from celebrating?"